This talk was recorded at Against the Stream Buddhist Meditation Society in Los Angeles and is freely offered for your enjoyment. For more information, please visit againstthestream.org.
In loving kindness, if you get super uncomfortable, it will be a distraction from the phrases. So you can give yourself more permission to change postures, to relax a little bit more against the chair, or if you're halfway through and your legs are killing you, to continue the phrases and just do the relaxed posture. Just put your legs up and continue the phrases. The phrases are more important than the posture, than stillness. Allowing your eyes to close, bringing full attention into your body, into the present moment. And as the first formal act of kindness tonight, I invite you to relax. Physically softening any places in your body that can be softened. Releasing the tension. Relaxing into the chair and the cushion. As you breathe, imagine breathing directly into your heart center. Visualize that or try to sense into it. With each rising and falling of the chest, breathing into your heart chamber. Beginning with offering yourself these kind phrases. May I be at ease. May I be happy. And the real kind of happiness, not temporary, fleeting pleasures. But truly happy with whatever's going on. May I be free from the suffering that blocks happiness. May I be happy. May I be at ease. May I be free from suffering. repeating these phrases to yourself slowly, take a breath between each phrase. Let it resonate, let it settle in your heart and mind. Useful whether you feel anything or not, but try to allow yourself to receive it as much as you can. Your own good wishes, your own kind intentions. one last round towards yourself. May I be truly happy. May I know that I deserve true happiness in my life. May I be completely at ease with my mind, with my body, with the state of my relationships, with my finances, with all of the confusion in this world. May I be at ease with what is. May I be free from suffering through meeting the pain in my life and in this world with compassion. May I be free from suffering through meeting the pleasures in my life and in this world with non-attachment. Non-clinging. May I free myself through compassion and non-clinging. So that I can know happiness and ease. Now begin offering these phrases to someone that you've benefited from knowing. Someone who's been kind, supportive, encouraging. This category that is called the benefactor. It can be a teacher that you know, it can be a kind friend. Parent, grandparent, or it can be someone that you don't know but that has inspired you. I often just think of the Buddha. Offering these same phrases. May you be at ease. May you be happy. May you be free from all forms of suffering. one last round to the benefactor. Should be someone who's pretty easy to feel kindness towards and appreciation. And inviting them into your heart. And then bringing to mind someone who is neutral to you, that you don't have a strong feeling about, someone you don't know very well. Maybe even picking someone in the room tonight that you don't know. Maybe the person sitting next to you, or in front of you, or behind you. Sending them loving kindness. May you be at ease with whatever's going on in your life. You come to experience genuine happiness. May you be filled with compassion and non-attachment so that you are free from suffering. Be happy. May you be at ease. May you be free from suffering. inviting this person into your heart. They're just like you. Even though you don't know them, they have the same core wish for happiness that you do. Now turning to someone who's difficult in your life, bringing to mind someone that's annoyed you, that you've been angry at. The category that we call our enemies. And it doesn't have to be your biggest enemy. Probably shouldn't be the most difficult person in your life. But somebody you're having a little difficulty with. The annoying driver that cut you off. And bringing them also with the intention of compassion, kindness and forgiveness into your loving kindness. Understanding that however they hurt you or scared you or annoyed you, it was because they were confused. They were in pain. Offering them loving kindness, even to your enemies. May you be at ease with the difficulties in your life. May you be free from the suffering. You experience true happiness. Beginning to extend outward in all directions. Include your friends and family. colleagues, community, neighborhoods. Include everyone you've ever met in this whole lifetime. Thousands, tens of thousands of people just like you, doing their best to find some meaning, find some happiness. And extending beyond the known to the unknown, all of the people that we've never met, that we never will meet. Of every nationality, of every race, of every religion and political views. And beyond the human realm, including all animals, in the sea, in the sky, on the earth, in the earth, all forms of life, this planet itself, has a living system. With the phrases, may all beings be at ease. May all beings experience true happiness. May all living beings learn to respond with compassion and mercy and forgiveness to the pains in their lives. May all living beings learn to let go, to stop grasping, to stop clinging. All beings do what needs to be done to free themselves from the self-created misery of violence, of greed, and of ignorance. As you are sending love and kindness outward in all directions, this whole planet, remember to include yourself. You're part of the all. Nobody is more important than you. And also, nobody is less important than you. May we learn to be loving and kind without so many conditions. Wishing for all beings to be at ease. Well, there's a lot of different ways to do this practice, but the practice itself is pretty simple. Going towards the goal of unconditional friendliness and care and kindness towards all living beings. Breaking our small-minded, self-centered tendency to only care about the near and dear, and them only when they're behaving mostly the way we want them to. Opening to that connection that we have with ourselves, knowing that we all want ease, and understanding that this is a universal principle that's the same for everyone, no matter how confused we have become or others have become. And through these practices, it is promised that we will get closer and closer to living in connection with others and to truly caring about each other, and to break that kind of tribal mentality of only my homies and nobody else. And for many of us, the most radical part of, I think there's two very radical parts of this. One is actually forgiving our enemies, having kindness towards those who've hurt us or who we've been put out of our heart for whatever reason. And for many of us, it's incredibly radical to even consider really loving ourselves, really having these wishes of kindness and compassion towards ourselves, which also necessitates some forgiveness towards ourselves. Before I go on, any comments about your experience, something that you saw that was surprising or interesting or disturbing that you'd like to share, or any questions about how to work with this practice? Please.
You said before that you had a problem with the one phrase, may I be free from harm and danger, but you don't have a problem with may I be free from suffering. And I'm wondering what you see as a distinction there.
Could you hear him? He was saying, what's the distinction that I'm making between harm and suffering? Because I was saying I didn't quite believe that we could actually be safe and protected from harm, but that I do believe we can be free from suffering. In Buddhism, we make a distinction between pain as the unpleasant physical or emotional or psychological experience. Pain, unpleasant, it hurts. Most people would say, that's suffering. Right? Pain is suffering. But this is important because actually the Buddha's making a different distinction. He's saying, yes, pain is a given, and suffering is about how we relate to the pain. That it's possible to actually have the experience of pain if met with compassion. You don't suffer much about the pain. If met with kindness and forgiveness and acceptance and mercy, it's just painful and it's tolerable and not actually suffering. But when we do what we usually do, which is meet pain with hatred and judgment and anger and resentment, it's that whole extra level that the resistance, that the aversion to harm, to pain, is the distinction that we're making in suffering. So in the loving kindness, when I'm saying, may I be free from suffering, I'm not saying, may I be free from pain. I'm saying, and I tried to put it in there, may I respond to the pain with compassion so that I don't suffer about it. When the Buddha said, I teach a path to the end of suffering, when it comes to this lifetime, possibly he was talking about the greater reincarnation. If you awaken in this lifetime, then you won't be reborn and experience pain in your next life. But when it comes to this lifetime, the only hope for ending suffering is by uncovering compassion towards our pain. That's half of the work. Compassion towards pain, you won't suffer about your pain. If you're truly compassionate, if you really do the work to uncover it, then shit will still hurt. Buddhism is not offering a fantasy life of no pain. Which is also why I said I don't really like saying, may I be free from harm, because I can walk out the door and get mugged. And then am I, you know, or hit by a car, or get in a car accident tonight, and I could be harmed. And then am I like, oh, well, shit doesn't work. I mean, I think of the so many people in this world that must have been so kind. Like the obvious example I was writing about recently of like Tibetan monks and nuns doing compassion and kindness practices their whole life, and then invaded and imprisoned and tortured, and did their practice protect them from harm? It certainly didn't protect them from external harm. Perhaps what's being pointed to is that with enough compassion, they're able to meet the harm, the physical abuse, with forgiveness and with compassion, and that they don't suffer extra about the atrocities. That makes sense to me. I can get behind that kind of, not extra, harming myself extra. Or not harming through living in hatred of the enemy, but actually forgiving and having compassion for the enemy. I know you guys, a lot of you heard me, I say this a lot, the Dalai Lama, when talking about the communist Chinese, will say, my friends, the enemies. I think it's important not to have this spiritual new age delusion of, oh, I don't have any enemies. I've got some serious fucking enemies. But I have compassion for them. I have a friendly relationship to them. There are plenty of enemies in this world. And maybe they can even remain in the enemy category still with forgiveness. When you forgive somebody, do they automatically join the friends list? Sometimes, but not necessarily. But to have a friendly, compassionate, forgiving relationship, even to the people that have harmed us or those we love or are destroying this world in whatever confused political war, ignorance. So that makes sense, right? Yeah, it's just a semantically different definition. What else, please?
So my understanding of the metta is a way, but it's towards other people, is that you're changing yourself inside to be more kind, loving, passionate, and that's really important. That changes the world I've kind of taken that with my practice to be basically intentions that I set inside to be that that means something, if that's going to lead to things happening. And so I'm curious if, and this is coming from, I will admit, my neighbor made me watch The Secret this weekend, and I thought it was like totally ridiculous. And you know, like, I'm sure a lot of us have like major aversion to the idea of like money prepping in the house and all that stuff, and that was totally disgusting. But the message of thinking certain thoughts and having like that kind of reality about things, that's the way I live. And so I'm wondering, is there even any Buddhist teaching specifically about the actual external world being affected by the intentions that we set or the mindset that we take?
The answer is yes, if the question is about Buddhism. I'm not so sure that the answer is yes if the question is about the teachings of the historical Buddha. Definitely different Buddhist religious traditions have made up, in my opinion, philosophies that would fit with sort of, I can think of several examples in Tibetan Buddhism, where like your prayers are freeing the beings in the hungry ghost realms, or they actually believe that they can like affect the weather and stuff like that with their chanting and their praying. And so there's definitely forms of Buddhism that would say, yes, your practice can heal, can affect, can free beings from the hell realms, can bestow grace upon others, right? Because that's part of what the question is, or affect your world. My understanding of what Siddhartha Gautama was saying was that this is much more and almost solely about your relationship to what's happening and freeing your mind to respond wisely, your heart to respond kindly to what's happening, and not a magic spell to control anything. The one way that it does sort of control things, and it gets a little mystical or esoteric, is that as you purify your karma, hopefully, more and more good shit will happen. As you become more and more loving and kind, and but it's not so much like that, because karma is taught in Buddhism on a multi-life thing, and it's like, oh, you can totally be fully compassionate and kind and loving, but your old karma from past lives can still be ripening here and now. And the fruit of all of your kindness and positive, you know, secret prayers may not ripen until eons from now. It doesn't work in the way that some philosophies say, that like you just do it and it happens now and it's sort of immediate. According to Theravadan Buddhist perspectives, it doesn't work that way. So, but I don't really know. I don't really know the answer. Sometimes loving kindness, and it goes back to the harm, it's said that one of the benefits is that when your heart becomes kind and open and forgiving, that the whole world becomes safe.
Yeah, so that, one of my favorite quotes is, you see the world not as it is, but as we are. And I think that's true, and it actually kind of my transition from being a perspective. And I think that when we have that kind of positive outlook, we have a smile on our face. We have a different demeanor, and people respond that way, and I've seen it that way. So in that way, I believe that there is an effect in what's inside of us affects what's outside of us.
Yeah.
And that's, and I'm a scientist too by background, so it's like that, I've seen that evidence, so I believe that. that's as far as the more far-reaching stuff. That's what it's great about the text, I guess.
Yeah. I would hope that as we wake up more and more, that we really do see the world as it is and not as we are. I would hope that these practices lead to discernment and not a affected perspective, but that we really see the greed and hatred and delusion as it is, and the joy and love and kindness and compassion as it is, and not through our transference.
Yeah.
Not through our
projections. It's our natural human state, since we go to be that, you know, to see things as we are, because that's just so easy. But to be enlightened would be to really see.
And I have some confidence that that's where these practices are taking us. That's where the potential of training the mind and the heart through mindfulness and kindness and compassion and forgiveness is going to get us more and more living in reality, free from the projections and our filters. Liz?
I found an interesting practice in compassion, but I recently decided, like, I guess for most people, it's the case, so you kind of have to take baby steps. And so I'm trying to philosophically take baby steps toward, I guess, the same general area we're all trying to kind of get to. And a pretty simple thing is kind of, you know, making an effort to understand where people are coming from when they're doing, I guess, like you said with the Dalai Lama, like when someone's doing a really evil thing or a really fucked up thing, just making an effort to kind of sit there for a minute and think, like, where are they coming from? Why are they doing that? And for me, that's, you know, it's worked to understand. Not that it warrants or justifies somebody doing fucked up things or evil deeds, but for me, it's been it's had a greater impact than I would have initially thought to try to understand where somebody's coming from when they are acting out and say through racism or whatever, some sort of hostility.
Yeah. Huge. Huge and necessary, and we can't get there without seeing deeply what's underneath ignorant actions. Without compassion for the pain and confusion that and ignorance that people are in when they're causing harm, we can't forgive. We can only have empathy and compassion and forgiveness if we see, oh, this is coming from their suffering, and now it's spilling out onto me or others. And we get a lot of insight into that through looking closely at ourselves and seeing, oh, I'm the asshole some of the time. I'm the one being unskillful, unwise. And why? Oh, because I can't hold my cravings or my aversions or my delusions. And sometimes I'm the one with the quick tongue or the impatience or the humility to take responsibility. I'm not perfect. I'm imperfect because I'm not so skillful at dealing with my own pain or my conditioning or my greed or my desire to control. And then I cause harm sometimes. I annoy people, like whatever. We have that humility. We take responsibility. It's easier to then see it in others. No, they're just like me. Maybe way fucking worse, but just like me, still. Right? We have the same seeds. We have the same tendencies. Maybe we're not overtly racist, but I'm sure that we can all look at some form of oppression that we perpetuate, if we're honest, some level. Maybe you're not racist, maybe you're classist. Rich people, They don't deserve to be happy. How about Republicans? So maybe you're a politicalist. We all have some, right? Some. Is that not a word?
It is now. You coined a new word.
Political ist. Stop politicalism.
Yeah.
Couple of things. One is that when I started these practices, I was sure they weren't going to work for me. I'd been doing mindfulness for a while, and I knew that that was going to work for me. Present time awareness, I got it from the beginning. Don't be in the future. Future sucks. Past sucks. Present maybe sucks, but it's tolerable. Loving kindness, I didn't have much confidence in it. And had these teachers who were saying, and it's part of your true nature, and it's your Buddha nature, and you're going to uncover it. It's already in you. You just need to gain access to it. And my idea, my feeling was, wait, I've been meditating. I'm looking in here, and I don't see any loving kindness. I see fear. I see anger. I see craving. And they said, well, you're just seeing everything that's blocking it. You're seeing the obscurations, the coverings. And I had some faith. I had some faith in the Buddha. I had some faith in the mindfulness, what I'd experienced so far. I had some faith in my teachers, my benefactors, who hadn't steered me wrong as far as mindfulness went. And so I continued doing it. And I really, honestly, feel like I did it for years before I meant it. I would say, may I be happy. I didn't mean it. I'd say, may all beings be happy. I didn't mean it. But I kept saying it. And eventually, I came to mean it. And eventually, I came to believe it. Maybe I just brainwashed myself. I don't know. Perhaps that's what we're doing here. I don't know. But over the years, I came to mean it, to believe it, and to experience it. To really wishing happiness for myself and all other beings. Really, sincerely feeling kind, even towards my enemies. And it took a decade. And what a relief, what a great, for me, what a joy to go from such a closed heart to having glimpses and experiences of what it's like to be open and caring and kind. So I share that with you to encourage you. If you're not feeling much yet, or maybe you're at it already for a few years, maybe it's new to you, if you want to be free, it's a long path for many of us. It might take a while before every single category is genuine and you mean it. It might take a while. Probably will take a while. But it's worth it. But it's totally worth the effort. Because the outcome is more ease. Really being at ease. Not only me saying it, but really being at ease with this world. With your life. Not all of the time, but a lot of the time. Yeah, please.
I noticed that while I was present with that, that the kind of mantra that I was, you know, letting myself process was, I found some difficulty with not endowing it with very specific visuals or attaching it to to certain stories, and I guess trying to find that the feeling of it, and let that carry me through. Kind of based on your experience of going from mindfulness and moving more towards, towards that this exercise. How did you, I guess, acknowledge that pure kind of intention without attaching it or endowing it or really connecting it with specific visual things?
Well, mostly I would just encourage you that it's okay. Let the specific visual things just be a part of it for a while. And do it. And over the years, find your own way with it. My experience is that eventually some of those things will drop away, or they'll be there, but they won't be a problem. And you won't get so lost in the stories, even though the story might be there, but the phrases are what's primary. That it's a long-term personal relationship with how your mind and heart respond to this practice. And not needing it to be a certain way, but just do it, and let the visuals be there, let the stories be there, come back to the phrases as much as you can, with as little judgment about the visuals or the stories as possible. And then over the years, let it unfold organically for you. Last two. Christopher first.
I want to extrapolate on the two last things that you talked about, and from something from Santa Monica that you said. In the 3 months of coming here, that one sentence that you said, one paragraph that you said, changed everything for me. So I wanted to bring it up because you had talked about it, kind of, but you didn't phrase it the way that it hit me. Judging my spirituality and my growth every 10 years took a fucking backpack right off of it. Took a backpack off the back. And I need to be here, I need to be here, I need to read this, I need that, I need to be a part of that, I'm trying to get better with that, I go over this, I go back, man, I just took a backpack off of it. I just want to say, when you're talking about, this stuff takes time and work, I'm so used to, and as Americans, here now, faster, quicker, whatever. That just took the biggest backpack of, weight off me. So I want to thank you for that.
Thank you. Yeah, it's a good reminder that they call, some have called this path a path of gradual awakening. Not a quick fix, but gradually we change our relationship to our own mind, to the world. Gradually, over the years, we become more kind, more present, more compassionate. It's both, each moment. In this very moment, you have a choice, if you're being mindful. And over the years, you'll become more proficient at choosing to be mindful. Right? So it is. It's one moment at a time, but it's a long path.
Was that the Dalai Lama that you said? I just want to make sure. Was that the Dalai Lama?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, okay.
That at one point, I think it was in Los Angeles, somebody asked the Dalai Lama, what was the quickest, fastest, and cheapest way to get enlightened? And I believe he started crying when he was asked that question. Out of the sort of like, there's really no fucking hope for these people. And he said, I never want to hear that question again.
What?
Something like that. Yeah. And he said, I don't know, but there's no quick, fast, cheap, easy way to do this. And he talked about his own experience. He said, I've been the Dalai Lama. I'm the 14th one. He said, I don't remember any of the past ones. I'm the 14th Dalai Lama. In this lifetime, he was probably in his early 60s at that point. He said, I've been the Dalai Lama for 60 years. I was raised in the monastery. He said the first 10 years, you know, from 4 to 14, he said I didn't make much progress. I was just kind of causing trouble for the monks. And he said, and then from, you know, 14 to 24, I started taking my meditation more seriously, and I started to benefit from it. I started to see that my mind, I was changing my relationship to my mind. And then 24 to 34, more progress, 34 to 44, 44, 50. He said, every decade, as I look back, I make a little progress every decade. I become happier. I become more compassionate, and I have more skills. He said, that's what I encourage. Commit to your practice and check in on your progress every decade or so. Yeah, it's a very different way of looking at it. Last comment, Miles. Question.
I was just going to say something about the lag time between meditation and behavior. And I'm the asshole in the car. I'm the guy who's pissed off that you're in front of me going slowly. And I can do meditation, you know, over and over and over again, and I'm still that prick. But having become aware of it, I am making an attempt to change my behavior. And I guess I can get better with what I said. But, you know, there is, I think there's a connection. I mean, if I waited until like Medicaid did, you know, or maybe the fact that I'm even attempting is something I don't know about. But it just seems to me that there's like this lag time.
Yeah. Yeah. Something to the fake it till you make it kind of philosophy. You don't have to be really genuinely feeling kind to stop being unkind some of the time. You don't have to wait until it's easy and natural and the practice has caught up with your actions to start trying to act in a more skillful way, with the humility to know that we will fail and that we'll still be the asshole a lot of the time, but we're trying to not be so aggressive or whatever it is. Good. Well, I offer all of this to you for your own experimentation and reflection. And in the spirit of Buddhism, don't believe it, don't take it on as a belief system, but give yourself a decade and find out for yourself if it works, right? And then trust your direct experience, not your opinions or mental ideas about it, but really apply the practices and find out for yourself. How's it work? So, a bunch of announcements. We have a sit-a-thon fundraiser. What is a sit-a-thon? It's like a marathon, but you just sit there. It's 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. on October 30th. And so the deal is you get a sponsor sheet. And your friend says, I'll give you $1 an hour that you meditate. And you get them to pledge it and to write it down on this sheet. And then you get, you know, 20 of your friends. And then you're getting $20 an hour. And maybe you only come for 1 hour. And then your friend, you say, I only made an hour. I only did it for an hour. But where's that buck? And then you get $20 to give to the center to help support us. Or maybe you get a buck an hour and you get 20 friends and you come for 8 hours and you get $8 and 20 times 8, whatever that is, Or maybe you get some of your wealthy friends to say, you can't sit. I'll give you $100 an hour. Whatever it is. Please consider taking this, and you know, it's in a month. I guess it's a month from tomorrow. So you want to start collecting sponsors. Has anybody started? All right, it's going to be a great fundraiser. Are people going to?
Question. Yeah.
Yeah, you can come anytime throughout the day. I'm going to be, all of the teachers here are going to be teaching. I'm going to be teaching some of them, I think in the afternoon, the evening. You come, there'll be some guidance, it's going to be a group. How many, is anybody planning to do it? You haven't started yet, but how many people are planning to do it?
Is it a weekend day?
It is a Saturday, I believe. The day before Halloween. You can come in costume if you want. That's what we should have done. Costume sit-a-thon. Fundraiser. Please consider it. It would be really a nice thing. It's a day long. You raise some money for the center here. Take one of these tonight. Start collecting pledges. What else? Also, the retreat that we put on, that our center puts on, the Kind Awareness Retreat, Against the Stream Retreat. We hold it in Joshua Tree, out Yucca Valley, out in the desert. Is November 13th through 19th. Registration is open, and we're close to the bare minimum number, just to break even. We have to pay the retreat center. We need a handful of more people to break even. But we have space in this retreat for like 100 people. It is great to do a retreat. How many people have never been on a silent retreat before? Okay, so you should all sign up tonight. You're ready, whether you know it or not. And those of you who've been on retreat know that it's a great experience, that you will benefit more from a silent retreat than probably anything else, than any amount of sitting for an hour a day. You go, you're silent, you watch your mind, you do loving kindness. You freak out. You experience joy. You experience suffering. Please consider registering for this retreat.
How many days?
I guess it's six. 6 nights. This weekend, Diana Winston, who is a local teacher and a long-term friend and colleague of mine, we were in teacher training together with Cornfield. She's teaching here on Sunday, October 3rd. That's this Sunday, right? Yeah. The Bodhisattva vows. So the Buddhist vows about dedicating your life to compassion for the benefit of the world, all beings. Be a great thing to check out. Diana's a great teacher. Come check her out Sunday. You can register for this tonight. If you really want to come but you can't afford the registration fee, we do give scholarships. We don't turn away people for lack of funds, but we also could use the support, so please consider coming to that. In 2 weeks, on Thursdays, for those of you in the room or people that you know who are in recovery from alcoholism, addiction, any forms of addiction, we're doing a five-week workshop in Santa Monica, over on the west side of the Santa Monica Center, on the four truths. So this is not 12-step recovery. This is using Buddhist principles to address addiction. And there's a system that we've created about using the Four Noble Truths. So this is called the Four Truths Practice of Buddhist Recovery. If you're interested or you know somebody who's interested, 5 weeks, five Thursdays in a row, Santa Monica, I'll be teaching it. Question?
I went to a few Thursday meetings in the past few months. Is it different?
Yeah, it's different. We're taking over the usual meeting and running it as a workshop for those 5 weeks.
What time does it go through?
7:30 to 9:30.
Does it help with smoking?
I don't know. I would imagine. Yeah. I would imagine. Okay, I think that's it. What else did I have? Oh, lastly, One of the ways that we support the center, we're a nonprofit. We ask for your donations here, and the way that many people choose to donate is by becoming a monthly supporter. So there's this sheet here, and on the back you can say, rather than giving a few bucks every time I come, I'll just give a certain amount each month. And so you fill this out and you say anywhere from $25 upward per month, and that way you're helping to support the center. Please consider becoming a monthly supporter. I think we're actually reworking it. Mary and I have been talking about as an incentive for people to become monthly supporters, that people who become monthly supporters and give $100 or more a month will get to come to the day-longs and the classes for free. And if you come here regularly and do a class or a day-long, you're probably giving us $100 a month anyways. So if you just dedicate to giving us $100 a month, it would really help us pay our bills. We don't always quite make our bills around here, so we could use your support. Knowing that you're always welcome, regardless of finances. It's not really a business. It's a service that we're trying to provide, but we have kind of a high overhead to provide the service. So that having been said, there are two bowls that are put out for your generosity. We suggest around $15, if you can afford that. Some people can afford more, and we appreciate whatever you can give. If you need to give less, give whatever is appropriate for you to give. If you don't have any cash, there are credit card machines. You can slide your debit and say, you know, I can afford $10 or $15 or whatever is right for you. And somebody will be back there. Probably Holly will be back there for that. All right, I think that's all of my pleading. Am I forgetting anything? Anybody? Okay. One more thing, and then we'll cushions can get stacked over there, and you can bring your chairs and stack them along the back wall over there. So it's thought that these practices have a positive effect not only on ourselves, but that the offering and sharing of this merit is extra good for ourselves. May we share the merit outward in all directions with all living beings. May each one of us awaken and bring a positive change to this whole world. All right. Have a great night. See you next time.